This hour of Canuck Central brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints of Molson Canadian or Coors Light plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your local Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Let's bring in our next guest, former Canuck, current analyst for NHL Network. It is Corey Schneider. Thanks for this, Corey. How are you?
Pretty good, guys. How you doing?
We're doing well. Just a wild and turbulent Canuck season, as usual. As as somebody who's played for the franchise, it never really is boring around Vancouver, is it?
No, there's always something you guys have to talk about, so it's good for you, your industry and your job, so I'm sure you're not too concerned about it.
No, we're definitely not. They've kept us busy this season with a range of things that's been going on. We'll get to some of it, but the Canucks have now won three in a row. You know, this is obviously a team that's underachieved for a lot of reasons to this point of this season. What have you made of the Canucks so far?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you mentioned some of the just noise around the team that isn't on the ice. But, you know, when you think about on the ice, you lost guys like Lindholm and Zadorov, who were additions. Zadorov, you know, midseason last year, but I think had a good impact on the team. You know, you replaced with Jake DeBrusk, and he's played well. But, you know, it takes time to integrate him and get him used to it. And then, obviously, the big one, Thatcher, Demko, and Ned. I know Kevin Lankinen has been more than anyone could have hoped for and really kept the team afloat, I think. This season, but not having your number one all-star goalie for most of the season, it isn't going to help anything either. So, you know, it is strange because it's mostly the same team. A lot of the same guys from last year where they really played well all year long. Quinn Hughes is having an even better season somehow. So you'd think they would hopefully have a little more traction. But, I mean, all things considered, with what they've had to work through and deal with, you know, it's pretty impressive that they're still, you know, in a playoff spot and hunting to move up in the Pacific.
Yeah, and I think the question we all have is, can they keep blocking out this noise that gets even louder and louder, especially when the team president comes out and puts both JT and Pedersen on blast the way they do? And is it a situation, even when the team admits that the noise has been getting to them, does winning kind of drown that out if they keep doing it?
Well, winning, you know, I've heard a saying that winning is the ultimate deodorant. So as long as you win, it covers up everything, right? Everyone's happier. Everyone's placated when you win. It isn't until you start losing or things go sideways that the cracks really start to show. So, I'm also pretty amazed that they're winning in spite of all this, that they're able to sort of focus on what's going on and just play hockey. I'm not really sure what the plan is there, why some people are saying things that they are. I mean, it's kind of the worst-kept secret about, you know, JT and Pedersen. Why do you have to come out and confirm it if you're the management? Now your players just have to answer the questions, and it puts them in a tough spot and just distracts them from doing their job. So I'm not really sure what the impetus was there, what the purpose of Rutherford sort of confirming what most people seem to know already. But, you know, obviously they have their reasons, and they did it for something. But it just seems like an untenable situation that needs to be resolved sooner than later.
Yeah, I can't think of any other examples of this happening where maybe locker room dynamics, you know, you question what's going on between players. I mean, those kinds of things happen, but to publicly come out and let everybody know, like, yeah, this is happening, and it's the biggest reason that we are falling short of expectations this year. It's just it's currently an unprecedented situation, Corey.
Yeah, again, I don't know exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's all three levels of the organization. You know, I don't know what is so can't be rectified between the two players. I mean, as players, you don't have to get along with everybody. I think chemistry is slightly overrated. I think character is a better indicator. I mean, I've played on teams where guys didn't like each other, but they were able to do their jobs and focus on the game and win. You know, and the second level is the coaching staff. I mean, you're the ones who have to, you know, set up the guardrails and the expectations in the dressing room. So clearly, I think Tockett's a good coach, and I like his attitude and mentality, but clearly whatever he's trying to do or is trying to get through to his team isn't working on that front. And then management, you know, you locked in both of these guys long-term. You have to know what kind of personalities they are and who they are as people, and are they going to get along? Because these are the two, you know, cornerstones along with Quinn Hughes of your franchise for the next 7-8 years. That's on you, yeah, to judge that character and judge the relationship. And if you misjudged it, you know, that's on you as well. So you can't just sort of blame the players for what's going on. You got to either do something about it or admit you made a mistake in the first place, keeping both these guys long term. And I just feel like there's not a lot of accountability going on from any level of the organization.
Yeah, I think that accountability point is very fair, especially when there is that much finger pointing and, you know, you still have a hand in putting the team together and having them in the position they do find themselves in. And, you know, the thing I kind of wonder about, too, is and Rutherford was mentioning how they're both kind of, he admits they're both distressed assets. And if they're trading one of them, they may not even get a top two center back. So he's very open about how their value isn't where it needs to be given the level of talent that they do have. And if you're another team and we're hearing this, teams are all kind of lowballing. Why would a team, given the Canucks in their situation, want to give them an out on a trade anyways?
That's exactly right. And I think that's, you know, again, it wasn't exactly a secret that things weren't great out there. Mm-hmm. And then confirming it, I think, just validates teams to sort of say, all right, we got time. We'll wait. We'll wait you out. We'll just see if you take our offer. And, yeah, we can use them, but they seem like, you know, do we want those guys on our teams if they're causing all these problems with your team, you know? So not that any of this is true, but that's how it's perceived. And I don't think the team has really done themselves any favors by airing a lot of this out, because now, as you mentioned, it makes it harder to move them. And, you know, does this signal some kind of rebuild? Do you then jettison other guys, or is it just a one and done and then you keep moving forward, but your team's not as good?
Yeah, it's and it's a situation that's not going away. They're on the road right now, but we'll see how it continues. Dallas tomorrow, and we'll have that game on Sportsnet 650 here. Corey Schneider, our guest. You know, Thatcher Demko played one of his best games since coming off of injury. It's been tough for him, and I guess that was expected. He even admitted it. It's going to be a slow ramp up, given he missed training camp. He's been out for a while, hadn't played a game in 8 months when he first returned to the lineup. How difficult can it be for a goalie to come in when everybody else is in mid-season form and you're just trying to get your legs?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel for him. You know, you just hope that he gets to a point where he can continue his career at the level he was at before, because then it becomes sort of a long-term health issue. So obviously, you know, you hope that he is fully recovered at some point and healthy and able to play. But yeah, in terms of the delay and the rust, you know, I've always equated it as a goalie, especially, it's like trying to jump on a moving train. The train's moving 100 miles an hour. Everyone's on board, and you're trying to time it to hop in and grab on and just sort of hang on until you can get settled. So the game is so fast right now, and it just moves at a breakneck speed that for a goalie, it takes a while to get used to that pace and that speed just in your head, your decision-making, your reaction time, all that good stuff. So clearly, I mean, that's an issue for any goalie. There are very few who can sort of trump all that and just jump right in and not miss a beat. So, you know, again, hopefully Thatcher, it's a good sign that he played so well. And that, again, the most important thing is that he's fully healthy and that there are no more setbacks, there are no more injuries that are related to this, and that he can just continue his career and get back to where he was.
Well, and I always kind of wonder, especially for goaltenders, how much confidence and in your body goes a long way. And when you've had the lower body injuries, and in order of, you know, in terms of selling out and really loading up and laying it all out there on the ice, like how long does it take to kind of overcome that hurdle so you don't even worry about putting your body at risk, so to speak?
Yeah, it's definitely a consideration. I mean, there's no half measures in goaltending. You know, when you got to make a movement or you got to go get to a puck, you got to do it. You can't hold back. If you try to protect it or wait, it's going to go in the net. So, you know, there are no half measures. And, you know, for me, I had a hip labrum surgery. It took me, you know, I was cleared to play after 5 months, but it probably took me a full year to feel the same or feel normal again, where I was getting to all my ranges and spots. And because part of the injury is that it prevents you from getting into the spots you need to be in. So you kind of are used to standing up a little bit straighter, maybe not sitting in as deep to certain positions. So your body gets conditioned to that, and you almost have to relearn to be like, oh, okay, this doesn't hurt anymore. I'm able to kind of get down to where I needed to get to, or get to the points of my, you know, saves that I needed to get to. So it's almost a bit of a reconditioning and a relearning process for your body to understand what you can do again now that you're fully healthy.
You mentioned just how fast the game is these days. I think the way it's played is always evolving as well. You know, we were kind of in the volume era with everybody getting their Corsi up and things like that. And now it feels like shot quality is of the utmost importance. And it always has been, but it just seems like teams are not so concerned with volume as much as finding the look that they want. And I think that's a big reason save percentage is trending down league-wide. What's your thought on the way the game is trending right now?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a combination of those things you just mentioned. I think young players and guys now, they all have side skill coaches. They all have the Adam Oates of the world and other guys that they work with separate from the team that say, hey, instead of just throwing this at the net from the half wall, why don't you hang on to it, cut to the middle, and see if you can do something more with it? So they're all being trained to look for better opportunities, which, again, as you mentioned, sort of decreases the number of shots. And then, you know, another byproduct of that is that you mentioned it's more quality over quantity, that, hey, you know, there used to be a time where a grade A coming down the wing was a scoring chance and a shot that they would take every time. And now if they don't like what they see, if you're out presenting and there's nothing to shoot at, they're not afraid to hang on to it and just sort of look for a trailer, kind of cut and see if they can throw it to the middle and get a better scoring chance. So as a goaltender, I think, you know, more of these shots are going in because they're just coming from better areas. So I think it is a combination of those two things, that the players are just so advanced now in terms of hunting the better shot rather than taking the 60-foot wrister that the goalie sees all the way and eats in his chest. That's basically a turnover nowadays. So, you know, players and coaching and analytics are becoming a very big motivator in that area.
Yeah, we've heard goalies say, you know, yeah, give me the night with 32 shots and maybe four high danger scoring chances versus, you know, 19 shots with 11 high danger scoring chances. I'll take the more volume every day of the week. Do you agree?
Absolutely. And again, nothing's better than the goalie eating 5 or 10 pucks to your chest or stomach area that you see all the way and aren't really contested. So it gets you in the game. It gets you feeling good about hanging on to the puck. But, yeah, I mean, when you only see 20 shots a night, if two go in, you have a 90 save percentage. It doesn't look very good, you know. So if you have a 25 shot night and two go in, you're at 92. So, you know, you didn't play any differently, but those five extra shots can make the night look that much better. And, you know, it is interesting to see how the game is trending in that way.
Well, and as far as the goalies are concerned this season, Connor Hellebuck seems to be ageless and he's been terrific this year, but we're seeing some newer names, at least at the top of the list, as far as save percentage goes and wins, guys like Logan Thompson, Darcy Kemper, Joey Decord, Dustin Wolf, and even Anthony Stolarz with the Leafs has been outstanding in the games that he has played. Is there who do you have you really enjoyed watching in net this season that's kind of emerging as a high-end keeper in the National Hockey League?
Yeah, I mean, you just rattled off a bunch of them, and I think it's great, too. I think there was a bit of a void. I think through the 2010s and, you know, before and a little bit after, you had such a staunch stable of guys. You had the Lundqvist, the Rennes, the Fleurys, the Bishops, the Quicks, myself, Corey Crawford, Luong, like guys who were Tuukka Rask, guys who were entrenched as starters for 10 years. So there wasn't a lot of opportunity for younger guys to break in and become, you know, key guys. And then COVID hit and you lost a year of development. So I think you're finally starting to see that next wave of goalie in their mid to late 20s fill that gap and that void, you know, meanwhile being spearheaded by guys like Hellebuck and Shesterkin and Vasilevsky. So I think it's great to see that next generation of goalies. I mean, I love Dustin Wolf. I think the way he plays is the way, you know, kind of purist goaltending in terms of edge control, reaction, patience. He's not just a big guy that blocks. He's got to play the game. You know, if you're a big goalie, you got to prove you can't play. And if you're a little guy, you got to prove you can play. So I think he's done that. And you know, I'm personally a fan of Joey Decord. His dad was my goalie coach back in Boston, so I've known Joey since he was about 6 years old. So I've watched him develop and grow and turn into this great goalie he's become. So it's you know, just a personal, more of a personal note in terms of enjoying watching him play.
Well, and obviously the Four Nations is coming up, and you being a proud American player who's represented Team USA at various levels throughout the years when you did play, what do you think of when you look at the strength of the American goaltending landscape, especially at the Four Nations, especially when you compare that to Canada's, where, yeah, they have some good talented goalies, but there seems to be a pretty big gulf between the high level that high-end goalies that Team USA has compared to where Team Canada is at?
Yeah, I mean, the U.S. for now, a while now, has done a great job. Like I just mentioned a few, Ben Bishop, Jonathan Quick, Jimmy Howard, myself, and now this group of, you know, not even mentioning Thatcher Demko, along with Ottinger, Swayman, Hellebuck. So it's been a good run for USA Hockey in terms of having stability in net. I don't know what it's attributed to. I know USA Hockey's made a point of emphasis to ramp up their goalie development program, and I can't explain why Canada's down a little bit. I mean, it's all cyclical. Sometimes it's just the easiest explanation, but the great thing about a short tournament like this is you just need one guy. I mean, it's great the U.S. has three good goalies, but only one can really play when it matters. So, I mean, if you don't have the guy or if one guy falters, you know, you got to find the next guy who's going to step in pretty quickly. So I definitely think it's a strength and advantage to have three options, but at the end of the day, I think it's Hellebuck's net, and if he falters, you got to see who's better, Swayman or Ottinger, and it can get a little dicey then. And conversely, you know, with Canada, everyone's down in their goaltending, but all it takes is Jordan Binnington to get on a heater or, you know, Sam Montembeault to get hot and they can win the tournament. So it's not always as dire as it seems, especially in a short tournament like this.
Hey, Corey, really appreciate the time. Thanks so much for this today.
You got it, guys. Thanks again.
There he is, Corey Schneider, former Vancouver Canuck NHL Network analyst, joining us and really starting to polish up his analyst game over the last little while. Corey from Boston is a great guest. Comes in one text, and there was a lot that asked us to ask him for the Yannick Hansen impression.
Yeah,
I mean, every time Corey comes on, we get asked that, and it's just not going to happen.
Eventually, he's not going to come on.
Yeah,
it's like not going to do that.
Yeah, I used to get this a lot because I was a pretty good impressionist.
You guys
always
we tell you to do more impressions.
Yes, when it becomes annoying, you know, it's just like
can you do this impression.
You're just that guy. That's like, hey, you're like the party trick.
Yeah.
You bring hey, Reach, you do the Stone Cold Steve Austin impression.
Like, I was trying to have a drink.
I'm just trying to have fun. I got one beer. Like what? No, what? I don't want to do this again.
Then a five times tonight.
Now you know, like it's the Rocky impression that we were talking about the other day that I keep get asked about.
He's just mumbling.
This is definitely just you doing it on your own.
It's like he's asking himself, "Hey, Reach, you want to?" Why? Yes, I do.
It's not true. Bick texted me and said, "Do it." Do it, you coward.
Do it, coward. Oh, man. That was funny. Hey, but you know what? Corey didn't hold back about Rutherford's comments.
Yeah.
He didn't say
player's perspective.
Yeah, didn't seem like a big fan of it. It's like, hey, we all know what's going on anyways. Which, again, like, poses the question. And everybody has different theories about why Rutherford said what he said the way he said it.
Yeah.
You know? Because if you're trying to improve your trade hands, like, it doesn't do that. Not that it hurts either, but it doesn't further along, you know, your ability to make a trade.
Yeah.
You know, you can come up with a lot of different conspiracy theories, right? Are you trying to make the situation so bad that a player will go anywhere? Like, I don't know, right? Like, those are all different things that you're trying to assume with what's going on here. But ultimately, it comes down to what the price is going to be. And I think Chris the Courier made a great point. He's like, all the stuff with Columbus for Pettersson, it's kind of like the Thornton trade from Boston to San Jose, where it's like, you're getting Marco Sturm, right?
Yeah.
You're getting, I forget who the defenseman was, but he was really good. It was actually a really good defenseman they got back, and the pick. And it's like,
Douglas Murray?
No, it wasn't Doug Murray.
Nope.
It wasn't Doug Murray. No, it was,
I remember the Marco Sturm part of that.
And Marco Sturm was in it. It was a draft pick. It was Brad Stewart and Wayne Primo.
Brad Stewart
was a really good defenseman, like a legitimate top four defenseman, right? Like, he wasn't a top pairing defenseman, but he was good, Brad Stewart. But how do you feel about that? Joel Thornton, Hall of Fame, one of the best centers of all time.
Oh, it's one of the worst trades in Bruins history.
Yeah, Wayne Primo, Brad Stewart, and Marco Sturm.
Yeah, you got like three credible NHLers. But
yeah.
You know, Joe Thornton's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, and Thornton had a 101-point season. Then he had a 73-point and 77-game season, and people soured on him, right? And after that, from Boston, he got traded to San Jose, and, you know, the rest is kind of history. You don't want to pull off that trade.
Yeah. I mean, Thornton went on and won the, you know, he won the Hart Trophy that year.
Yeah.
So it's like, you think about that, and it's kind of like, okay, you don't want to make that trade. Not that Pettersson is going to go on to win the Hart Trophy this year. But again, it's kind of like Buffalo with the Jack Eichel trade. You know, yeah, like Alex Tuch is nice. Peyton Krebs was a great prospect at the time. Like, you got some good pieces out of the Jack Eichel trade, but did you get a Jack Eichel out of the trade? No, you didn't. Right? And ultimately, the player like Jack Eichel is the one that's going to help you get closer to winning a Stanley Cup. But interesting to hear the player's take on it. And I, you know, that's part of the dynamic that's now open here is like, it is the worst kept secret in hockey, essentially. Everybody knew about Miller and Pettersson and their unhappy relationship between each other.
Yes.
But there's still an element of, even though Hughes and Tockett acknowledged it this year, there's still an element of probably just better left unsaid.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, there is absolutely, right?
Some of that stuff. Not from like a fan's perspective. Hey, sure, you want to give us more to talk about. You want to make it open and public for us. Jim Rutherford gave us 2 days worth of content. Now three.
Yeah.
3 days worth of content just off that one Gary Mason interview. But Ultimately, how do your players feel about it?
Yeah.
And how do Miller and Pettersson feel about this now being public? Didn't seem like Miller was too thrilled to be in Nashville and having to answer a question about it yesterday.
No. I mean, at the same time, though, like, do you care how they feel? If you're so disappointed with how they've conducted themselves, yeah, and how unprofessional it's been, do you care that you put them in that spot?
Yeah.
It's kind of like you made your bed, now live in it.
Yeah.
The only question is, does it make things worse? They won last night. We'll see what happens in Dallas. We'll see what happens when they come back against Detroit. Does this situation make one of the players reconsider? Like, we know what, you know, the reports have been out there that not that JT has asked for a trade, perhaps, but he's willing to go. Others think that he has asked for a trade, but it hasn't been confirmed. It might be semantics here, but does he get to a point where he's like now demanding to move?
Like, I don't want to deal with this
anymore. Like, I was open to it. Now it's like, get me out of here.
Yeah.
And that
does change your leverage even more so, because it's like, now you got a list of three teams and you got to make a trade. Okay.
Yeah.
Then you're kind of really up bleeps creek.
But we're only, 48 hours removed from him making those comments. That's why, what's going to happen here? And like Corey said, I mean, winning is still the ultimate deodorant.
Mm-hmm.
It's when you lose, when the cracks start to show, right? And could the winning make them reconsider? And ultimately, we'll see if that happens. I mean, only, 5 weeks at a trade deadline?
Yeah. We're getting closer. We're almost there.
Almost there.
March 7th. This text from Loud Titans fan. Who cares how they feel? My God. They make $8+ million a year to play hockey. Suck it up. Babies who can't get over it.
Yes.
Another text. How many cups for Big Joe? How many for the Bruins? Ha-ha.
No, I mean, hey, it's 100%. It's fair. It's
one for, the texter didn't have the haha. I added that for effect.
It's fair, right?
That was a good call.
But that trade didn't help them win. You know what I mean? That's not the trade that helped them ultimately win the Stanley Cup, right?
No.
Man, they didn't even get a first round pick.
No.
It was Wayne Primo, Brad Stewart, and Marco Sturm. And then Brad Stewart, they flipped to the Calgary Flames, I believe. Yeah, they traded. Oh, I guess. Okay. They traded Wayne Primo and Brad Stewart to the Calgary Flames for Andrew Ferentz and Chuck Obisu. And Andrew Ferentz was a piece of their team that was pretty a good depth physical defenseman that helped them out on their Stanley Cup winning team.
Man.
So maybe Andrew Ferentz was a difference. So maybe that trade did work out for the Boston Bruins.
Chuck Kobisu on the the all-time list of prospects that I thought were going to be great.
Oh, Chuck. Oh, yeah.
That were not.
Yeah, him. Rico Fatta was a guy that I thought was going to be good.
Jeffro Tage Thompson was acquired in the Ryan O'Reilly trade. That's a return I would like. But also, it took Tage Thompson, 5 years after the... How many years after the O'Reilly trade did Thompson finally pop for the Buffalo Sabres? I mean, it was... It's been quite some time, and he's looked good. And even still, O'Reilly went on to win a cup with the St. Louis Blues, and Buffalo's still floundering at the basement of the Eastern Conference. Stan Riccio, Satyar Shah. It is Canuck Central. Coming up, Landon Ferraro is going to join us. His take on the 3-game win streak and more. Plus, we've got a mailbag since it's a short show tomorrow. We're going to do a mailbag Friday on a Thursday. That's still to come in the second hour of the show. That's next. Canuck Central.
Talking all Canucks all the time. It's Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Number two of Canuck Central. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintec studio. Canucks and Dallas Stars tomorrow from Dallas. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. Let's bring in our next guest. It is Landon Ferraro. Joins us every Thursday here on Canuck Central. And we lost Landon.
Yeah.
This is what happens. You got to have faith in your production staff, and then the call drops off and everything goes to bleep anyways.
And look at you throwing them under the bus.
I threw the phone line under the bus.
Did you just Jim Rutherford them?
Maybe a little bit.
Or
zero
Ash,
accountability on my end.
Or Ash and Josh cannot coexist in the same producer pit. We tried everything we can.
We're a terrible duo.
Yeah.
Nothing gets done.
I mean, they'll work well for like an hour, then falls apart.
Yeah. I mean, things happen.
Yeah.
Just, you know, wouldn't be the first time somebody in Vancouver had zero accountability. But in any case, we move forward. All right, Landon Ferraro joins us, Canucks analyst, joins us every Thursday here on the show. What's happening, Landon?
Not too much. What are we up to?
Just, you know, wondering how the three-game win streak is sustainable, how much it has changed the conversation. Look, the bottom line is, given everything that's happened this week, it can't hurt to have this three-game win streak ongoing for the club right now, right?
No, of course not. Like, the more they win, the easier everything it is. I don't think it changes anything in the eyes of management here. I think they're going to continue looking and seeing what's there. You know, like Rutherford's comments were, you know, pretty clear of what their thought process is right now. But yeah, winning always makes it at least more, you know, a bit more fun when you're going around. It doesn't feel like you're walking on as much eggshells.
Yeah, and I mean, ultimately, you know, we all kind of wonder if they can maintain the winning and if they can overcome the noise. And you know, what was your reaction to reading the comments from Jim Rutherford and ultimately what type of impact that could have on the team?
I mean, I liked seeing it. I mean, you don't generally see someone from a management group coming out and just kind of just airing everything out and just making it black and white. You know, this situation has been talked about so much that, you know, it's not like he said anything new. It was just confirming everything that everyone was talking about already. And then, you know, for the guys, you know, I said it on the radio the other day when we were talking about it, but, you know, I really don't think it changes anything for them. Like, it's now confirmed to us on the outside of the dressing room, but I don't think there's one guy that's sitting in that room that read the article and is like, oh man, like, how did I miss this going on? You know, like,
yeah.
It's the exact same situation. It just, now it's confirmed instead of everyone just, you know, saying before we'd make a comment, we'd say, you know, we think this is going on, even though everyone really knew it was going on.
Yeah, and now I guess the one thing that changes is Pettersson and Miller can't just, like, dismiss even the notion of it when they get asked about it the minute they return to Vancouver and do their first media availability. And how, I mean, look, how is that going to affect them? They're grown-ups. They're making a lot of money to play this game. I think some people, that comment will fall on deaf ears, but as Rutherford said, this situation, you know, the underachieving of this team, he's put the biggest point of blame on those two players and their relationship issues and how much it's affected the team. Now they've got to answer for it when they get back to Vancouver, and how they deal with that is going to be, I guess, one of the biggest questions once they return to Vancouver this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine that it's going to be a lot of what we saw with the reporters in Nashville, with just a lot of no comment.
Yeah.
Just move along, no comment, no comment. You can ask as much as you want, but I'm going to continue to say no comment. Like, it's going to be the Marshawn Lynch treatment of, yeah, I'm just here so I don't get fined. You know, like, that's how I imagine it going, though. Like, I don't think they're going to speak on it too much. Like, it's not a fun situation for them either. Like, we can, you know, for all of us, we could say that it's, you know, they're making a lot of money and all those things, but at the end of the day, like, it's still a crappy situation to be in, and it's not one where every day you're walking into the dressing room and you're like, man, I can't wait for practice to end and the reporters to come in and I get to talk about this again, right? Like, it's, you know, it's a tough situation, but
yeah,
it's also been kind of brought on by themselves and you know, their personalities and how they work together. So it's, you know, it's kind of a situation of, it is what it is. Like, you're going to have to deal with it.
And I think the at least my sense of it is, hey, you're going to have players in a locker room that don't get along. You're going to have friends in a workplace that you don't get along with. But it's magnified, I would imagine, because these two players are such significant parts of the team. You know, they both wear a letter on their jerseys. They are part of the ultimate leadership group. And so it's not like, you know, other end of the roster guys that maybe you could send down if there's an issue, or easier to move along if there's an issue. There's no easy way out of this current situation, and you always want to bet on talent. So your first feeling on this, if you're a front office, is like, we'll find a way to make this work, as is what's happened here in Vancouver. But this isn't as big of an issue, nowhere near as big of an issue, if these guys aren't, you know, two pertinent parts of the leadership group on this team.
Well, leadership group, and then on top of that, they're both centermen.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if they're both wingers, this isn't as complicated anymore. Like, it would still be a big situation, but it's not as hard to replace wingers. It's the centerman that's gold up front. So what you're talking, the two best centers on your team are now in this. Like, yeah, it's tough. You know, I believe that, you know, just off of Rutherford's comments and just how you get the feel, like, it's one of those situations where, you know, this has been, you know, an issue in the past, but they've always been able to kind of work through it and, you know, kind of just push past and move along. But it always kind of seemed, you know, again, just from the comments, of like, it was just between them and it wasn't an issue pushing out to the other guys. And maybe that's the biggest difference with everything that was going on this year and the start and with those two and their relationship. Maybe it started to be a bit more of a distraction to the outside, to the rest of the guys, and it's now to the point where, you know, like, that's the reason why they're saying, like, this can't be anymore.
Yeah.
Because even if they keep winning and they go on a big win streak, what's going to happen the next time adversity hits? Like, is it just going to go right back to an issue again?
Yeah, and I guess it just comes down to, are they going to make that one of those moves then by the trade deadline, right? And I think that's ultimately it, because if they don't, then you're kind of playing with fire for the rest of the year, unless you just don't care what happens the rest of the season.
Well, I mean, I would think that, yeah, they're trying very aggressively to make that deal before the trade deadline to get it done. But, you know, again, if you're looking at Rutherford's comments, like, he's not going to risk the entire future of this franchise by rushing a deal. You know, it's bigger than just this season. It's making sure that the pieces are right moving forward. You know, he specifically brought up Quinn Hughes and, you know, his deal in a few years. When that's done, like, we have to make sure we have a team in place that he wants to be here. And so if it drags into summer and it's more of a draft trade where teams are generally able to get a little bit more because there's more time to work on things and not in the middle of the season, then that's what they're going to do. Like, it's whatever is best for the organization in the eyes of the management is the timeline for this. But I would imagine, and he said, like, they would like to get it done. It's just they're not going to rush it either.
So the 3-game win streak puts them back into a playoff spot here. I think we've seen a little bit of, like, last year's Canucks show up. They look like that on the other night against St. Louis, where, you know, building a lead on the power play, getting some good goaltending, and really closing out a game in the third period. And then you have a night like last night where it looked more like this season's Canucks, where, you know, they fell on their back foot a little bit, trying to hold on to that lead, maybe got a little bit lucky, couple of posts from Nashville, but ultimately come away with it. There's been some good and some bad, and ultimately, I wonder just how much of this they can continue to build on. How much does it help their confidence that they were able to close one out last night, even while not playing at their best?
Well, I mean, now that they're stacking it together a bit, like, you know, a few wins here, like, it's, again, like, this is a team, when they're playing like this, like, they're fun to watch. They can handle teams and make them play more the way that they want to. And so the guys are seeing, again, like, this is working and this is our success. Like, this is what we have to keep doing. If they're able to keep doing it, that, you know, it's 3 games, tough teams get 3-game win streaks at some points during the year. Like, it's the consistency has been the issue this season. So, I mean, they can build the confidence and they're starting to see it go into the win column. So if they just continue on that path of sticking to their system and playing hard, like, the difference of the forecheck in those games compared to, you know, the losses beforehand when the Oilers and Buffalo and those, like, they were non-existent in those games. Then all of a sudden, guys, like, everyone is in on the forecheck and finishing checks, and it just looks like a completely different team. But, you know, I'd say that Nashville game last night, like, if this team was sitting at the top of the Pacific right now and played that exact same game and it came out to the same 3-1 win, every one of us would be saying, you know, that's what a good team does. They just, you know, even on and they're not their best night, they still find a way to get it done. But for this year, it's, you know, it's a bit of a different feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that we saw last night, which I thought was really encouraging in the first period, was how much they were able to get inside, and not just in front of the net. You saw how often the Canucks forwards, Pugh Suter, Pettersson, even JT, when they had the puck, they cut towards the middle, they drew defenders towards them. They really did a good job of attacking that space, and it's something we've been waiting for all year, and the question, I guess, comes down to doing so consistently, but it's like they do show they're capable of doing these things.
Yeah, I mean, like, on that first goal, like, it's a perfect example of it. Like, if you are always entering the offensive zone on the outside, like, it's hard to make those little plays in. But if you can enter into the heart of the ice and kick it out, so, like, Pettersson in, now he's kicking out to Hughes, like, now there's depth and there's width to the attack. Like, in Detroit, we were always taught in at our blue line and then out at theirs if we're going to make a play. But if you're going to carry it, you got to carry it through the middle because now you're drawing everyone in. So, like, it's a perfect example of it, though. Like, it opens so much up, and then when you have that fourth layer coming in that's Hoglander, like, it's hard to defend that, especially when you're getting a defender in Josie that's, you know, already having to stop up into the middle, but now make a play to try and get around. But Hoglander has all the speed. Like, that's the type of attacking mentality and you know, type of plays that you and the Canucks have been really trying to talk about and work about this year. It's just that was, you know, it's just been so far in between.
I really think the X factor these last two games has been Tyler Myers, though. What's gotten into this guy the last two games? He's looked like Calder Trophy winning Tyler Myers again.
It's amazing what a little time off in the middle of the season for a refresh can do. Like, everyone else is, you know, still in the slog of the season, and, you know, as much as you're not happy with missing three games, like, especially as you get a bit older, like, you know, your body gets a bit more rest, your joints feel a little bit better. You're obviously sitting there watching your guys playing and roughing it out too, and seeing them get some wins, like, you're eager to get back in. You feel more excited coming back in. It's, I mean, that pass was beautiful last night. The patience on it was awesome.
Yeah, he's really, like, I don't know. These last two games, he's been really good. I know he had those the gaffes in overtime, but his game has been pretty steady going back a while now. And I really think the biggest development to maybe come out of the Hronik injury is, hey, like, we still can have a top pair that clicks at a high level. Like, Hughes and Myers have done really well. The numbers back it up. There isn't a big drop-off there as if, you know, it's Hughes and Juulsen as we've seen in the past. So you can still get an elite, at least results-wise, top pair with Hughes and Myers. And now you have the luxury of having Hronik on a second pair with Forbert these last couple of games. It really lengthens out your decor and gives, I think, Adam Foote more options with his deployment.
Oh, 100% it does. And that's why they're so, you know, every time that the Canucks and, like, the coaching staff and management would talk about splitting Hughes and Hronik up, and, like, yes, they're so good together, but, like, what can our D look like as a group if we can split them up and kind of extend our depth? And you now see it, like, everyone's game's been able to step up a bit, especially now that it's been a few, you know, it's been a while now that Hronik's back and, like, everything's kind of settled down roster-wise of who's in the lineup. So it's, you know, a bit more steady, but, like, all those guys have stepped up and been able to play. Like, Myers has had to fill a bigger role this entire season. And, like, again, like, I think that's part of the reason he's been so good, as, you know, since he's been back, is the fact that he had a bit of a break after having to eat a lot of minutes that were not originally there for him at the beginning of the season. And that's in, like, in a good way, because there's, you know, everyone just slots into where they should be. And now, like, he can step into this role, and he's able to make some plays, and he's moving well still. Like, he's a good, useful player that is a big part of the back end.
And, you know, as far as the forward group goes, too, and we saw a lot of good things from the defenders. One thing we did see was guys the last few games break through slumps. Pugh Suter scored, and Nils Höglander looked dangerous last night. And we spoke a lot about Höglander this year and how obviously it's been a disappointing year for him. He's had a hard time scoring and really finding traction. Does it look like he's finally turning that corner to you?
I think so. I think, like, even mixed in with his last few scratches, like, the games around it, like, I think he's been on it a lot more. You know, it's still, it's kind of like the Pettersson of debate of, you know, that's been going on of, like, you know, he's starting to play better. But, yeah, like, his cap is up here, though. Like, that's what we're waiting for. It's kind of the same with Höglander. Like, he signs that new deal that'll kick in, and we're all expecting more production. But at the same time, like, he's been on the forecheck, he's causing turnovers, he's drawn a few penalties. Like, every game that I watch now, I feel like I notice him in a good way a lot of the time, and like, for him, it's like we've always said, like, his gift is his engine. Like, when he's moving and keeping his stick down and can get in a forecheck, like, that's when he can really be the most use to the team, and it's starting to show up more and more.
Yeah, as for, you know, I know the off-ice discussion has been a big part of the conversation here, but Pettersson's game is really started to be a little bit more consistent on a good level rather than where it was earlier this year. He had the 7 shots on net against the Blues. Thought he was good again last night. Just looks a little bit more assertive on the ice. What are you seeing with Pettersson?
Yeah, I'm seeing a guy that's starting to believe in his own abilities. Not that he's just a good NHL hockey player, but a guy that is, you know, like, I don't know about you, but every game he's starting to make, like, one or two more plays that he wouldn't have a month ago even.
Yeah.
Like, he's starting to find that feeling again that, I mean, the rest of us guys always wished we could even know what that feels like, of, like, the puck becomes a string and, like, he just kind of moves around. But you're right, like, he's putting himself into those areas. Like, he wouldn't have driven down through the slot earlier. And, you know, just before he makes that pass, like, you can see him make that little toe drag to pull the puck back into his feet. So now he's cleared space between the defender's stick and his, and he can make the pass out. Like, all those little things you just didn't see from him before, but you couldn't see them because you wouldn't drive to the middle of the ice, to the guts where you have to. It was always on the outside. So he's putting himself into good spots and creating offense out of it. So his game's moving well. And, you know, obviously, regardless of all the noise around, like, this team is way better, and there's no debating that when Elias Pettersson is on his game and making plays.
Final one for you. Game in Dallas tomorrow. Do you ride with Demko or Kevin Lankinen for this game in Dallas?
I would go Demko again. You know, he had a good showing, and if he's feeling good and says he wants it, I'd have that discussion to say, like, hey, like, I'm leaning your way. What do you think? And if he says yeah, which I would imagine he would, I'd let him ride.
Interesting, as both, you know, coming off really strong performances. So it's a good problem to have for the Vancouver Canucks, especially at this stage of the season. Landon, always appreciate the time. Thanks for this.
Yeah, have a good one, guys.
There he is. Landon Ferraro, Canucks analyst, joins us every Thursday here on Canucks Central. And, you know, Demko coming off that game against Nashville last night. Look good, look confident. As we talked about with Woodley yesterday, you started to see some of the signs in the ugly game against the Edmonton Oilers that Demko might be finding something again. And then on top of that, Thatcher Demko's career numbers against the Dallas Stars. 8 games, 7 wins, 1 overtime loss. 17 goals allowed, a .931 save percentage, with a shutout and a 2.1 goals against average. Decent numbers against the Dallas Stars.
Yeah, had a good game against the Preds. Do you, I mean, he made 31 saves, and he was spectacular. And I know somewhere...
And we know how Pete DeBoer feels about Thatcher Demko. So.
Yeah, he's, you know, stole the mojo out of the Vegas Golden Knights in the bubble, yeah, in 2020.
He did. So, you know, it is an interesting decision because, you know, to this point, as we talked about with Lankinen, like after Lankinen had the big performance against Washington on Saturday, you know, listening to the post game show, it's like, yeah, Lankinen's our guy now. You just gotta ride him while Demko figures this out. But Demko puts one great performance together and you're like, I kind of want to see Demko again.
It's Thatcher Demko. Yeah. You know, his ceiling is different, right? And until Demko finds his game, I'm all for going to Lankinen. We'll see how close he is because he's had a couple of good games here and there. Mm. It's just about, can he string them together? It's very much like we talk about with the Canucks, right? I mean, Leon says posts don't count. I mean, yeah. As in like, you know, he got lucky or?
Yeah, I guess he got lucky. How many posts did they hit last night?
Hit a couple.
It was like three. I think.
Yeah, two or three. At the end of the day, it's like, sure, you hit some posts. And posts doesn't mean it's always going in. It also means you missed the net.
Part of the reason, you know, a player hits a post is because the goalie's really taken down the angles really well. So you can look at it either way.
He says he's trying to say Draisaitl is a joke. I get it. Okay. As in Draisaitl. Posts don't count. Remember that time he was talking about Shelov's posts don't count?
Yeah.
I get it. Good shout.
Good shout. That's a deep, deep cut. From Artur Shilov's playoff run. It's Dan Riccio, Sat TR Shaw. We've got a mailbag coming up, so we're going to try and leave a little bit of extra time for that as your questions here for us. Mailbag Friday on a Thursday here on Canuck Central. Denny's True North Taste awaits with Denny's 100% Canadian beef burgers. I think I can speak English. Made with new shredded iceberg lettuce on a brioche bun and all the classic ingredients you love. Denny's, you are listening to Canuck Central.